Unlocking potential, one dream at a time, on the CJ Moneyway Show.
Sit back and relax. You're listening to the Moneyway Show.
What's up, my good people? Can you imagine a world where every person you meet has an extraordinary story to tell? Well, welcome to the CJ Moneyway Show, the podcast that brings those stories right to your ears. And I'm your host, CJ Moneyway. And I'm on a mission to discover the extraordinary in everyday life. You'll hear heartfelt, real-life stories from individuals who have formed their own path, shattered stereotypes, and transformed their personal challenges into becoming a driving force for positive change. On the CJ Moneyway Show, we dive into the cultural issues and celebrate the uniqueness of diverse communities. But that's not all. Join us as we journey into the realm of self-help, personal growth, engaging with experts and everyday heroes alike to inspire, enlighten, and entertain. Get ready to be moved, to be inspired, and to discover the untold stories that surround us every day. This is the CJ Moneyway Show, unveiling the extraordinary within the ordinary. So what you waiting for? Dive in, join us, and become part of our community of storytellers, and welcome to the CJ Moneyway Show.
Welcome, my good people. Welcome to the CJ Moneyway Show. And I'm with your host, CJ Moneyway. Let's get it.
What's up, my good people? This your boy, CJ Moneyway. Welcome to the Moneyway Show. Hey, today I got my son on with me. Hey, what's your name, boy?
My name is Jacoby Young. Detroit, Michigan. 17 years old.
Hey, all right. So, I brought you on today, man, because not only because you're my son and because I love you, you know, but this is things that I want to do because I feel like for the young people out there, and even for some of the older people out there, man, I think you got a story to tell. I think you went, I know you went through something that was traumatic, something that was life experiencing, hopefully life changing, but, you know, life throws us a lot of curveballs at times. But I just want you to tell the people, man, some of the things that you went through, and in particular that certain thing that you went through last year.
So last year, around November, my life took a change. November 15th, I went to something happened that I never thought in a million years. I went to jail for a school threat that I made toward my school that I in a million years never thought I would do. And that's when my life took a change. On November 15th, I got processed through the Ferndale Police Department. And I was in the holding cell for about 6 hours before they transferred me to Oakland County Children's Village, where I got fingerprinted, mugshot, changed, and I got took out to the Florida quarantine. By my first 2 minutes there, I was in a fight almost my first 2 minutes on the pond. But I got moved off the pond, moved into the fish bowls, which is another pond, and guards came through, asked what was going on, didn't know what was going on. And I got moved to a different floor where I quarantined for 6 days. Quarantine probably was the worst time of my life, being in the cell 24 hours a day, just you and the wall, nothing else. No pencils, no books, nothing, just you and the walls all day in a bright light, trying to sleep at night. I think my first day there, they put me on suicide watch because I wasn't eating nothing. So when you're on suicide watch, they give you just a stout. You got no clothes in that, just the green thing. They give you 2 blankets, and I continue not to eat nothing. I think the whole time I was there, I didn't eat. In there, it's a place you don't want to be. Outward times, I ain't called my mom about 2 weeks, just because every time I called her on the phone, I would hear her cry. I didn't want to hear that on the phone. When I finally got out of quarantine, it got a little better. And you could finally be on the floor with other people. But then you're on the floor with other people, it's still crazy. People fighting every day. I see somebody get pee through in their face.
What?
Your life in there.
You say pee through in their face?
He doing that face in real life.
So you said that, you know, November 15th is the day that you actually, man, that's crazy because that was like 7 years to the date.
that I published my book, man, Both Eyes Open and Both Eyes Shut, and here it is, my young boy walking through life with his eyes wide shut. But you say that, you know, you went to school and you made a threat. So, like, what actually provoked you to do something of that nature? Like, what was the atmosphere like? Because if I'm not mistaken, it was like the day before that a young lady from Detroit, your same school, right? Yeah. That she did the same thing, and they came and picked her up from her house, and, you know, she got arrested, and then you went out and did it the next day. So I guess I just want to know, what was your mindset? Like, what was you really thinking that, you know what I'm saying, like, maybe that this couldn't happen to you?
I didn't think about none of the repercussions that came with it when it occurred. Mm-hmm. It didn't really hit me until I got in the car to go down to the children's village, and that's when it really hit me that it was going on.
That it was real, huh? So when you was in the police car and they handcuffed you and everything, what was your mindset then? Like, I know you had to be thinking about, you know, your mother and the things that she was going to say and, you know, the things that you was going to have to go through with that process, listening to her. Because like you said, you know, you was in the holding cell for so many days or whatever. You didn't want to call her and hear her cry. Is that because, like, when you in, like, I've never been to jail. You know, I've never experienced that. I went to jail for drinking and driving once before, but all I went is to the holding cell. But as far as just being locked up and have to stay there for multiple days, I've never experienced that. So is it the experience that you didn't want your mother because you would hear her cry? And did it make you emotional? And in that state, you don't want to be that way because in that you got to man up?
It really...
Lost him for a second. He'll be back there. Yeah.
That really played a part in it, too. Just every day, I didn't want to hear her cry. But when I heard her cry, it broke me down.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to hear that. It just, I knew she was hurt, and it took a lot for me to call. And then every time I talked to her, she knew I wasn't eating in there, so she...
He got bad connection, folks, but he'd be in and out. It's all good. There you go.
She didn't want me to be hurt and stuff, so... She didn't want me to hurt myself, so she wanted me to eat and everything, and it was hurting hearing her cry.
Yeah, man, you know, I remember the day vividly myself. Man, you know, I, as a father, you know, as a dad, as a father, as you call me, pops, it hurt me, man. You know what I'm saying? It really did. I cried, man, I cried, I cried, I cried. I think I cried for like 3 days because as a father, and like I said, you know, I've never been in that situation, but I'm not oblivious to life. And I know how it is with people that do get caught up in the system like that. And I guess my biggest fear was you getting locked up for 20. How many years were they talking about giving you?
20.
For 20 years, man. You know, like you was 16 at the time and, you know, you ain't even experienced life yet. You hadn't even experienced life. You hadn't even experienced your full potential of the things you was doing, because at that time you was playing football and, you know, plus some of that.
Actually, when I was in there, I didn't even know that I was facing 20 years. I was blind to all of it. I'm just going court date by court date, seeing what my judge saying, you're not going to be released here. He told me, my first court date ever, he told me, I'm not going to release you. You're going to stay here. You're going to miss the holiday. You're going to stay through Thanksgiving because I'm not scheduling you another court date till the 28th of November.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that because we was all on the phone call and we thought that he was going to let you because you was in there for like, what, 2 weeks before that? And we just knew, we was praying and hoping that he was going to let you out, man. But when he said that he wasn't letting you out to, what was it, right before Christmas or something like that?
The 16th.
Yeah, man, you know, that was a hurting feeling. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know your mom's heart dropped through her stomach. My heart dropped. You know, I was calling people that I can confide in. And, you know, my pastor and, you know, a couple of my partners or whatever. But that was a hurting feeling, man. And, you know, it was a hurting transition. And so, like, from that experience that you went through, now let's go to your court dates when you finally got out. So what was the process of you staying out of there and not going back?
So when I first got out, I was on house arrest. So I was on an ankle monitor. I had very strict restrictions. I couldn't be on social media. couldn't have access to the internet. Mm-hmm. I got the internet for school, so I was really just living day to day. I'm out of my mind, bored. I just think to myself when I come home, like, man, what I didn't see in here is something I want to come back to. Like, this is real life. Like, people are getting beat through in their face for real. They fighting here every day. I'm talking about they sneaking, just fighting, getting jumped, everything. Like, the food, I ain't eat not a single meal the whole time I was in it. I lost 28 pounds my whole time I was in it. I didn't eat a single meal.
For real? It was that devastating, huh?
I didn't eat a single meal.
So, why in there? Like you say, you didn't have a notebook. You didn't have anything to write with. I think, didn't they give you something to read? Didn't they give you a Bible or something to read or whatever?
Yeah, that's when I was in quarantine. When I was in quarantine, you couldn't have nothing. But once you got on the floor, then I could get notebooks and pencils and all that stuff to start writing. So it got easier when I got off of quarantine. But still being in quarantine for 6 days, really it was seven because I had to wait. They don't count the weekend, so you got to wait the weekend till Monday. So, and I went in on Wednesday, so it's Thursday, Friday, then Saturday and Sunday don't count.
What you mean it don't count? I mean,
because nobody in the office on the weekends to run tests. So them days don't even count for your quarantine, so you got to do a whole other 2 days on top of them.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, so you in your cell 24, you doing cell 24 hours a day, just you. You can't be talking to no other kids. You showering, you going straight to the thing. When you come back, you in your room, it's just you and four walls. I'm just thinking all day, like, I'm looking up in the ceiling. I can't go to sleep. This bright light beaming on me the whole time. It's a bright light just beaming on you the whole time.
It's cold in there? Was it cold?
Yeah, then mind you, they had me on suicide watch, so I got the snout on with the 2 gray blankets. But when I got off that, you know, I got a little better because they see I wasn't trying to hurt myself. None. I just wasn't trying to eat the food. I mean, then they started giving me, I got cool, the guard and stuff. They started giving me, you know, extra blankets and stuff. I was in there good.
Sit back and relax. You're listening to The Money Way Show.
We'll be right back.
Hey, what's going on? It's your boy CJ Moneyway. I appreciate you rocking with the Moneyway Show. Hey, if you listen to me on Spotify, Apple, Buzzsprout, whatever platform that you may be listening to the Moneyway Show on, why don't you drop your boy a review, share it with your friends, you know, anything and everything. All support is appreciated. The Moneyway love you guys. I appreciate you rocking with me. Follow me on my YouTube channel. All my platforms, man, social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you know, hit me up. All my links are in the show notes. Hey, I appreciate you guys for rocking with your boy. Be on the lookout for some things coming up that I got coming up pretty soon. I'll tune you into it a little later. Peace.
So, let me ask you a question. You say you was locked up 24 hours a day while you was quarantining, and this was at the same time, the same process when you first got in there?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess my question is, with the situation that happened, right? And so that's one thing, the situation that happened, so you feeling some type of way because I know that you know that you disappointed, you know, your mother, you disappointed your grandmother, me, Tori, you know what I'm saying? So with that mindset and sitting there thinking about that, and being isolated from everybody else where you can't really talk to nobody about what's going on. And the only thing you can do is speculate how people feel. What was your mindset? What was you really thinking about when you was just isolated for those 48 hours? Well, it was longer than 48 hours, right? Because you said the weekend didn't count.
Yeah.
Okay, so within that 72-hour time frame or however long that is, what was your mindset? What was you really thinking about? Like, what was your innermost feelings when you was going through that trying time right there?
When I really first got in there, it really, like, I really was just thinking, like I really did this. Like, I know my mama mad. I know I'm after hear her mouth. I'm thinking when I first go home, she going to be cussing me on the phone. I ain't thinking she going to be sad or nothing. I'm thinking, I'm getting the hot head right away. I'm thinking about y'all, like, damn, like, what my brother gonna say, my dad, my grandma, like, I know my granny gonna be hurting, because she wouldn't in a million years think I'd do something like that. My grandma still tried to defend me when she found out about it. It's really just, like, it hit different.
So,
nothing but just think, like, how you disappointed everybody in what you did.
And, you know, like, I know me. Like, I know me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know the type of person I am. I get kind of emotional on certain things, you know what I'm saying? And I just know me, man, if I was in that situation, every time I would think about how I disappointed my mother, you know what I'm saying, or how I disappointed my father, those that loved me, or those that believed in me, you know, I would have been crying, not only on the inside, but on the outside, you know what I'm saying?
And that was the difference. Like, I didn't cry for real. Like, I just cried when I went off on my mom, because it was like, I did what I did, what I'm crying about. I got to own up to what I did, what I'm in here for.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can't cry, you ain't here not. What you crying for?
That's real.
Like, yeah, you got to own up to it. I'm in here not. Ain't no going back.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing I can do is live day to day, hoping I get out, see my court case. I got to, like, somebody got to fight you. You can't just back away. You got to stand up. Do what you gotta do. I'm just, when I'm talking to my mom, that's when I'm breaking down. Because every time I'm, I know my, how my mama talk. She, hey, Cole, how you doing? It hurt me inside because I'm hearing her crying on the phone. Mm-hmm. And I took her crying on the phone one time. It really was, it went, I ain't called her for a while. I was calling my brother. She ain't know if I was okay or not because I wasn't calling her, but she ain't know I was talking to my brother. I'm talking to him. I'm straight. I couldn't call you because you wouldn't let me dialed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was straight. Just when I talked to her, I was straight. It took me a while to get over it, talking to her, crying, because she finally stopped crying on the phone. But it just, I ain't cry except when I was in them cells, the wall, you just thinking, I'm doing my push-ups every day, really, doing push-ups.
So while you in there, was you thinking about anything as far as like, okay, that's backtrack. So the first time that you heard that it was a possibility, and it was a strong possibility, because it was considered a terrorist act, right?
I got a false report of terror.
And so at this point, I think that it had happened in Detroit or in Michigan multiple times, because I think if I'm going back a few years back, somebody actually killed some people at school, didn't they?
2020, 2021, Ethan Crumbly.
Yeah, so at this time, it was heightened, you know what I'm saying? And you know, they was cracking down on these situations because I think that reading that article and going through that, I think that the parents got charged as well.
Yeah, they stand trial soon.
So with that type of situation, I mean, I know for me and I know your moms and Tori probably thought about it too at the time. It's like when your child do something, you know what I'm saying? When your child does something, now they want to hold a parent accountable for what the child did. And so that was running through my mind, that was running through the minds of the people that I was talking to, that it's a possibility that the parents can be charged for what the child just went out and did. But one thing I knew that you didn't have no guns, you know.
Yeah,
what I'm saying?
Because when I was talking to my social worker and everything, she said she knew that my parents wouldn't be involved because there was no weapons in the house. Mm-hmm. And didn't be around.
Yeah, and I had a lot of choice words. I can't say it on the podcast, but you know how I am. Just for the life of me, man, I'm like your grandmama, you know what I'm saying? And I said, at this point, like you said, you know, you said something that was key. You did it, you know what I'm saying? It was already done. They had already charged you. There wasn't no need to cry about this and that. I had to stand up and take it like a man. You know what I'm saying? I had to own up to my responsibilities, this and that. And so at this point, you know what I'm saying? It's like I was mad. I was upset. I was angry for what you had did. But at this point, it wasn't no point of condemning you. You see what I'm saying? It was already done. And not wanting you to go to jail, not wanting you to spend half of your life behind bars. It wasn't no, hey, man, why you so stupid and why you do something like that? Which, you know, that's not get that twisted. Now, I did think that it was very, very stupid. You know, and I think I told you that after you got out. But it wasn't no need to condemn you while you were in there, because only thing that I can think about is to love you. You see what I'm saying? Because I didn't want to see you in that situation. Your mama didn't want to see you in that situation. Tori didn't want to see you in that situation. Marcellus didn't want to see you in that situation. Your grandmamas didn't want to see you in that situation. And so when something like that happens, man, and something like that transpires, it don't only affect you. You see what I'm saying? It affects everybody. And so now let's get to this question. When you heard for the first time that it was a possibility that you were going to do 20 years in jail, what was your thought process?
I didn't know that well.
Oh, so you didn't hear that until you got out and was on house arrest?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're listening to the CJ Moneyway Show with my man CJ Moneyway. Tune in every other Friday to one of the hottest podcasts in the Midwest, where you can hear exciting episodes and up-and-coming artists like myself, even aspiring authors, entrepreneurs, and the everyday man and woman, right here on the CJ Moneyway Show.
That's good.
I had no clue that until I got home. And, you know, I was talking to people on the phone, and they sending me the post that say faced up to 20 years. You know, I'm still facing my sentencing, but I'm knowing that I know when I got out, it was no possibility that I was going back. Mm-hmm. Now, I knew that I was going to be out because I felt, or if anything, I was going to get a program. I wasn't going to do 20 years just off the fact that while I was in there, my laws were straight. Mm-hmm. I didn't have not one problem. I was staying out of trouble, everything. I have an upper level in there. I was best of the best. He would have never let me out on house arrest if he would have brought me back.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, that's why I felt I was doing good. And when I was on house arrest, I wasn't violating my house arrest. I was dropping clean every time. I'm doing everything he's telling me to do, following all my rules, meeting with my PO when she say meet, dropping when she say drop, being home by the time he tell me to be home on house arrest, whenever I'm leaving, call. So I felt like I knew I wasn't going to go back. But when I heard facing 20 years, it really was like that's really crazy, because if I really was getting in trouble in there, I really could be getting on 20 years right now. And if I was doing 20 years, I probably wouldn't know what I said.
Man, you know, 20 years is a long time to take off a young man's life. I thank God that the favor of God was on your life, that, like you said, even without knowing, the unknown, while you was in there, not knowing that you was possibly facing 21 years, but you stood up and you did whatever you had to do to get up out of there, not knowing that you were fit to face 20 years. You see what I'm saying?
And my mama didn't even tell me that. She probably seen it, and she still didn't even tell me that, what I was facing. I just, knowing what I had to do, because talking to my little social worker in there, talking to the guard and stuff, I was in there with a guard. He did 20 years when he was 11.
Mm.
And just talking to him, he keeping it real. He telling me we chopping it up daily when he in there. Man, this ain't where you're supposed to be at. I'm just talking to you knowing this ain't the type of person you is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple of the guards to this day. I probably can't say that up here.
No, don't say nothing that it incriminate you, but I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, that they really was cool, like, seeing where I was coming from in there, knew that wasn't who I was, or knew that, bro, you probably didn't do this, or feel me, like, that's how they were.
Like, you did it, like you said, you did it, but that wasn't your makeup, you know what I'm saying? Like, we all make mistakes in life, you see what I'm saying? And I say this all the time, some mistakes you can make, which you did right now, you can come back from, okay? But then there's some mistakes that you make or that people make, and they don't come back from. You feel what I'm saying? Either you in jail for the rest of your life, or you getting killed, or you ain't got killed in that mistake that you made. You feel me? So it ain't no coming back from that. Some people that make a mistake in the wrong place at the wrong time, they spend the rest of their life in jail. Some people was in the wrong place at the wrong time or went out there to go do something to somebody else and got caught themselves. It ain't no coming back from that. And so I hope that the lesson that you learned, that there's certain things, man, that if you keep on going down that road, you won't get the same results all the time.
And I'm glad, I say this, I'm glad that situation happened. My mom and them, she say she don't know why, but I feel like I'm the person that got to bump my head to see where it really coming from, because I could have been, who knows, I could have been got in trouble for something way worse than what I got in trouble for.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really glad I bumped my head, and that showed me, like, yeah, bro, you got to change what you be doing. You can't be around this, that, and third, and doing this, that, and being around getting in trouble. I had to really learn, like, it's real life in there. I'm on the floor with people who got felonies. Everybody in here got a felony. I'm talking about attempted murder. Okay, you fighting. I was in there, somebody fighting a temp that was on a temp right now. He in the county. They transferred him out of Children's Village. He's in the county right now.
Mm.
I was there for people fighting real life murder cases. For real.
So like you say, it took God to take you through the fire and actually experience it and go through. I'm thinking about these Hebrew boys right now when they went through the fire, and the Bible say that Jesus was in the fire with them. And so you said that it took God to take you through this situation in order for you to wake up and open your eyes before you had got caught up in another situation that you may not have got out of. That what you said?
I was lucky to even catch a break with what I got. I caught.
Oh, yeah, you were very lucky.
I got consent probation, which is 6 months. I could have got intensive, anything, just being that wasn't who I was and doing what I was supposed to do and them seeing that that wasn't the person type of person I was, knowing it was a true mistake. That's why I got off the way I got off.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed to get off that way because, like you said, 20 years I was facing. I could have gotten intensive probation for 20 years, but just being off the way I was talking to them, they seeing me every day, my logs being good, the guards telling them, like, you see.
And not only that, the referee that you had, you know, because I was on all those calls along with your mother and Tori, and he showed a lot of compassion, too, you know.
And it was crazy because one of the guards in the tube, she said, he don't play around with those, but my social worker. She said he doesn't play around with those cases either. So for me, she said for what I got and how he is with those cases, that really was a break.
Oh, yeah.
But she didn't see people get a book from him with that type of case.
Yeah, I mean, the first time that we was on the call and he was talking, I was like, I called Tori after we got off the phone. I was like, man, that don't look good. It don't sound good. But then you doing whatever you were supposed to be doing in there, your social worker going back, giving a good report, and his stance start changing something, you know what I'm saying? It started changing. And like he said, the last time, what was that, in January, February, the last actual case that you had, that we had to get on the phone or whatever?
March 9th.
And he said it was the letter that your mother sent him that really, you know what I'm saying, that really touched him, because he said he uses that letter to this day as a model letter to send to other people and to show other people that, you know, how heartfelt that letter was that he received from her. And so, you know, even with that, man, it was the support system that he saw that you had. And like you say, man, just continue from this day forward, man, to keep thanking God for what he did for you, you know what I'm saying? And learn a lesson from it and just go out there, man, and be the best that you can be and do all that God has for you to do, man. Live your life the way that it's supposed to be lived, man. I'm just going to leave it like that. Got anything else you want to say? Anything else you want to tell any young folks, any older folks that have dealt with some things like this? Is it any final words you'd like to give?
Man, for the young folks, jail ain't the place you want to go, bro. It ain't fun here. It's not. And I had to go on the jail tour for my probation to the Oakland, to the actual jail. One of the inmates, I seen him throw draws in one of the people's face I was on tour with. Like, it's not no game out here. It's real life. I went through every flow in there. 11-man cells, 10-man cells. You got 10 people in a cell sleeping on the floor in one cell. So you get beat up in this cell, you might die in here because the guard ain't going to be here in time.
So you got 10 people in one cell, you say? 10
people in one cell.
And when you say draws through in his face, was it doodle draws or just?
His dirty draws, because he told me, I had a dude in there. I was chewing some gum. Excuse my language. He said, stop chewing that gum before I make you my bitch. I kept chewing my gum. I might go stop because you told me to. But there was a dude, one of his bunkies. It was a dude named Tommy. He said, I want him. And it was a dude named Tommy. Wash my drawers, threw him in his face, threw the ball.
For real?
You get beat in this cell, you might not make it out alive. One cell, the guard ain't gonna get here in time.
Yeah. So I hope you never have to go through that again. I'm not saying that in life that, you know, we don't make mistakes. Things gonna happen. But I just hope that you don't make a mistake like that no more. But I'd like to thank you for coming on the Money Way Show, man, and telling us your experience and how it is, man, and the things that you went through. I think that it took a lot of courage to get on a podcast and tell the whole world or tell the masses how you felt and, you know what I'm saying, the things that you experienced, the things that you saw. And to say it so fluently and so accurately as you did, man, I really appreciate that, man. I love you, son.
Love you too, pop.
All right. Thank you. This has been the Money Way Show. This your boy, CJ Money Way. I'll holler at you.